Welcome to Conversations at Keston Law. Hi, my name is Joan Keston. I'm the founding attorney at J.A. Keston Law, PLLC. Our firm focuses on the practice of elder law, estate planning, and asset protection. I have here with me today Cindy Clark, who is my office manager, Brandy Cox, who is my paralegal, and Sissy Weisbrook, who is my director of marketing. We started this podcast after we had held some discussions, informal discussions at senior centers in the area, and felt that there was a lot of a valuable conversation and questions and misconceptions. So we started this podcast to address some of the issues that you all we all face. We may be relaying and getting information from clients, from our friends, from our neighbors, but we're trying to bring to the table things that we hope you're aware of. This is not meant to be a formal lecture. We do have more resources on our website, which is www.kestonlaw.com, and there you have some videos and some more formal type of information. So without further comment, we'll start this podcast today.
Last podcast, we went over, just glanced on assets versus income. I need more of an explanation that I could tell people that ask me that I visit in nursing homes and stuff.
Okay, and this applies and gets very critical in all kinds of issues, but here we're focused more on this difference for Medicaid. Is
mm-hmm.
that what we're talking about? Assets are things that you own that are bank accounts and what the balance is in there, your brokerage account, your IRAs, any bonds, annuities, cars, personal property, insurance. Those are assets.
Okay.
They can fluctuate in value. So when we're dealing with what asset value is, we look at those values at the day you apply for Medicaid. Income or the income or the income qualification means whatever you're getting in on a monthly basis for that day, based on that day you apply. So those are things like any wages, any salaries, any dividends you receive, any interest payments you receive, Social Security, pension, that's income. So when we look at Medicaid again, we're looking at what that monthly income, what you're getting every month. If you spend it all, it doesn't stay, it's gone.
Right.
If you don't spend it all and it stays in a bank account, then the following month it becomes an asset because you've captured it, you've kept it. So an income stream that you get once it stays in your account for the following month will then fall into the asset category.
Okay, so looking back at my mom, she gets $3,000 a month and she's currently self-paying a nursing home, and that $3,000 is going towards her care. In addition, she had some money from a sale of a house that my brother has to supplement with that.
Well, when you're private paying, doesn't matter. They don't care where it comes from.
Oh, I know.
They just want you to pay that amount.
Oh, I know. But that the pot of money she had from the sale of her house, it's going to be gone.
Right. But the difference where it gets critical is when you're doing the Medicaid, whether it's in the income category or in the asset category, in order to qualify. And then after, let's say, you are accepted and you receive Medicaid benefits, then the income goes directly to the nursing home, and that's when the government picks up the difference.
So the $3,000, say, once she's on Medicaid, that will never go into a bank account. This is going to go straight to the nursing home.
Usually.
Okay.
Now, again, what your assets are, you know, people look at what, if I have too much money, I have a house, I have all these things. And that's where these whole combination of income and assets, what defines it as a middle class benefit is that you're allowed to have certain assets.
And the assets for Medicaid are put into two separate categories. You have non-countable assets and then you have countable assets. Obviously, the countable assets are the ones that Medicaid or DSS is going to look at and scrutinize. There's a whole host of non-countable assets, which, like Joan mentioned, really makes this a benefit that's available to middle-class people. Now, some of those non-countable assets include a primary residence, and your home can be valued beyond $500,000 in equity. Now, it's important to note that that's your primary residence. If you have a vacation home, that's going to be the countable asset versus the non-countable asset of your residence, your home. Same with a car. You can have any kind of automobile, even a Bentley if you want, as long as it's your primary source of transportation. Any other vehicles beyond that, like RVs, other cars, motorcycles, those are the ones that fall into that countable category. You can also have certain types of insurance. There's a threshold for the face value, obviously, before it becomes countable from that non-countable list. You can have all of your household goods, your personal property, personal effects, things like that. Some really great things to have in planning in general would be prepaid irrevocable burial plans. A lot of people don't think about that, and that's something that DSS or Medicaid is not going to count against you if you have.
Yeah, I know we just got that from my mom. But explain to me what... Okay, my mom doesn't live in her house. She's living in a nursing home. She can no longer drive. So they're just sitting there. So how can that be considered an asset if she hasn't done anything with them?
Well, when you're dealing with a house, you have to show that a statement of intent to return home. And this is where, whether you're married or single, whether it's advisable or not to keep a house and a car when you're single as opposed to when you're married is part of some of the planning strategies that should be considered when you're looking at all this. It's harder if you're single and you're in the nursing home to have the house. Does it stay empty? Are you going to rent it? Does family, other family live there? So it gets a little more complex, and this is where it could vary by state what's allowed. So again, that's where you're getting into a complex advising and counseling. Do I keep the house or not? And I'm single and I'm in the nursing home. If you're married and the spouse who's not in the nursing home stays at home, it's kind of a no-brainer. You know,
right.
Somebody's got to live somewhere. So that again gets more complex. The issue is not whether you can qualify for Medicaid and get to keep that house, because you can. The issue then becomes a second layer of economics. What do I do with this house if no one's there? And then there's all factors in that. And then there's also an issue that when you pass away and you're single, there's such a thing called estate recovery, meaning if you when you go through probate, when the Medicaid recipient was a single person and they pass away and probate is done, there's a question, did you get Medicaid benefits? And if you did, DSS or the government can come against your assets and take your house, for example, or the value of what that house was, up to the Medicaid benefit you received. That's called estate recovery. So when we're married, that doesn't come into play. When the one dies, it's when you're single and you die. Again, there's a lot of misunderstanding, and people will often say, well, Medicaid's going to come take my stuff. That doesn't happen only in that one situation. Normally, when you're applying for Medicaid, they don't take anything. They will just say, you don't qualify. So you're going to plan and try to do things in order to qualify. Once you qualify, they still don't take your things.
They will only take it when I die.
If you haven't protected that asset somehow.
Okay.
And again, that varies by state, what that all is. But then they can come to get from your estate a value equal to what Medicaid benefit you received.
Okay.
Okay, then could you put that house or that car into a trust?
You can if you have enough time. Again, we're talking countable, non-countable assets. Everything comes back to that. The day you apply for Medicaid, they look back 5 years to see where if you've been giving things away and not receiving something in value in return. Like when people say, well, I sold it, but it doesn't matter. You buy and sell, you're getting value in return. It's gifting that you're giving things away. Putting things in a trust is gifting, technically.
Right.
You're giving it to something. If we have more than 5 years and we do that, it could be okay, but it really depends on the terms of the trust. And there's only certain kinds of trust that work in that scenario.
And another thing to keep in mind when figuring out if an asset is countable versus non-countable, or how countable, I guess, Medicaid or DSS looks at the applicant's ability to liquidate that resource. So if you're living in your house, you're not planning on selling it, it stays non-countable. you liquidate it, you sell it, you have access to that money. So that money then becomes an asset.
Yeah.
An accountable asset.
Accountable asset.
Right. And that's what my mom has been using for the last 10 years for her self-pay. Because and that pot is almost gone.
Because you've spent down. You've chosen in your family to spend down your assets.
And on then, her care.
Right. A private pay, spend down, no planning, and then when you run out, you'll apply for Medicaid.
Oh, we were really smart in my family.
Thanks for listening. I welcome you to visit our website, www.kestinlaw.com. On that website, you will find our schedule for seminars. We do seminars almost on a monthly basis in two locations where we formally address a lot of the topics we mentioned in this podcast. You also can follow the directions with this podcast. If you have any topics you'd like us to address in a podcast, feel free to write those and send those to us. And if you have any other questions and would like to have any kind of consultation, again, you can either contact us on the website, and our phone number is 910-509-7121. Once again, thanks for listening.